Support for Technology and Innovation Reporting comes from SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome to the March 15th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls is Joel Brovelite, our resident Mac guru. Hello, Joel.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to hear your voice again.
Nice to hear you.
Absolutely. Amos Aesop is there as well. Hello, Amos.
Hey, how's it going?
Things are well. How are things at Exigent?
Good, good, good. Luckily dry at this point.
That's that's a concern, isn't it, this week? It's been a horrible week for folks around the state and around in surrounding states as well. We're going to talk about maybe some of the aftermath of that in just a little bit. Joining us from the city of Pierre, Jeff Litterick with BIT. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Hey,
sir. And STPB social media marketing expert Heather Benson is here. We're going to talk a little bit later in the show, continuing our Elder Tech series, which is kind of kids helping their parents deal with modern day machines. Today's topic, we're going to cover some Facebook privacy settings, right, Heather?
Indeed.
And maybe a few more things as well. So welcome to the show again. We are a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we'll try to provide that answer. On Facebook, we are simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your questions or comments there. Don't be shy. You can send us a text, 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. And our phone number, if you'd like to call us, is 1-800-852-0214. 800-852-0214. 0214. Twitter users, you can send a question to me at KentSDPB. And again, that email address, in the moment, all one word run together there, in the moment at sdpb.org. That's probably the most popular way for folks to get a hold of us. And you can do that. And so you're in the moment, and we're going to talk about tech things today. You guys, I think, and Heather, probably one of the bigger notations on my notebook is the big Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp outage Wednesday kind of was worldwide and spotty in other places. But Heather, you said you noticed it more than probably I did that day. I was filling sandbags and pumping water most of the day. So I didn't really notice that Facebook was down, but you did.
Well, I did because that's my job.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And we were actually unable to post for a period of about 10 and a half hours, starting about mid-morning. And I know for a lot of people who've come to rely on the National Weather Service on Facebook, DOT, Highway Patrol, and follow those pages to get updates, as that blizzard struck and then having an outage was creating an effect that we probably need to think about in the future. If you can't communicate on Facebook and, you know, the average user didn't actually know what was going on, that the reason National Weather Service in Sioux Falls hadn't posted for 9 hours was because they couldn't, not because they didn't have anything to say.
Sure.
We've changed the way we get news, and the news was that we couldn't get the news, and many people didn't realize that.
I guess I didn't realize that. So that's, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that is interesting. That's not something we've ever said that, oh, the TV is down, we can't get our news. I mean, that's just not in your vernacular.
Yeah.
Right.
I was talking to my wife about this morning, and, you know, I mean, we were watching The Daily Show last night, and they were kind of making fun of, you know, people worried about their Facebook being up. But, you know, there are a lot of businesses that really rely on that. I mean, I saw estimates around $200 million dollars could have been lost during that time, and I totally believe that. I mean, there's companies that's their bread and butter, so I mean, it's just as bad as any other outage.
Yeah, I read some other similar take that one small business attributed probably $10,000 loss of sales.
Yeah,
which you feel bad, but then I'm also like, oh, this is why we need, I shouldn't say we need, this is why Facebook is so integral and built into our culture, despite the fact that, you know, now they have a criminal case from the New York Times just uncovered. They're so deeply ingrained, despite all the nasty stuff they made you.
Yeah, in fact, that seems to have no effect on users.
You're right, and stock price.
Absolutely.
So John T. Myers here. John, you joined us from Lemley. That's okay. I don't think you were sitting in that seat when I was giving the other introduction. So
No, I cut a call just a touch late. So thanks for letting me jump in.
Welcome to the show. And so help me, those on the techier side of things. Everybody sprung to the conclusion that it was a DDoS attack or denial of service attack. We've talked about that on the show before. It was hackers. It was this. It was that. But what Facebook's explanation was it was a configuration change, a server configuration change, and things just sort of the word was cascaded from there. And can somebody take a crack at explaining to me what a server configuration change is, I mean, basically, and how that can really send things sideways for folks in a hurry. Is there somebody who can, Jeff or Amos?
Go ahead. One of the things to remember, unlike a lot of businesses, Facebook, all their servers are the same. They run the same hardware, the same software, the same configuration on everything. They just run tens of thousands of servers to be able to supply the demand, right? But every server is almost exactly the same. They may have a few servers here and there that do something different, but just like Google, they actually build their own server hardware and stuff, and it's all the same. And a server config is just the configuration of the server, just like when you change your desktop wallpaper, right? You are changing the configuration of your computer. And they made some configuration change to their servers that caused them to go haywire, and the cascade was pretty easy because on a scale of Facebook, they can't change a few servers and have different servers not be the same as the other ones, because that would cause other issues. So it pretty much, when they are happy with a configuration change, they roll it to every server immediately and they all update so that everything stays in sync. Well, as you can see, when something really went bad, and this was probably a really bad one that wasn't easily recovered from, in that they couldn't just roll back the config change immediately. They were probably locked out of their own servers for a while. These are the consequences of that. So
that, I just can't imagine. I guess, Jeff, have you ever done that? Have you had that has happened to you, or maybe even Amos?
Oh yeah. We've all humans. We've all made mistakes. I've taken servers down by mistake. Luckily, they were redundant, and we had other servers there, and not to the scale of Facebook. I've made configuration changes, and servers have blown up. I mean, just updating. Everyone's updated Windows at one point and probably had some issue after an update. You know, it happens. That's the life of it. When you're Facebook, it's just very public, and when every server's the same, it's going to affect everything immediately the same, which means everybody's affected. So Google's had some of these outages too, but they've been more limited to different data centers versus the whole world kind of stuff. Microsoft, their Office 365 last month or the month before was offline for most of a day for half the world. So these are not as uncommon as you think. This is probably the one making the most news. The Microsoft ones make a lot of news, but most of them have been happening in Europe instead of America. But this has happened. We've had issues with authentication in Microsoft services at different times. So it does it in the complex world of servers and stuff and computers, as most people may be aware, it doesn't take much to blow up a computer or, you know, cause a problem if you're playing with the guts of it.
So I definitely feel for you folks in those roles, because it's a pretty thankless job, right? Like no one's like, oh, thanks to those server admins for really making my website work. They only talk about it when it's down.
Right. And you know, there's no way for us to have any idea, you know, what the configuration change was or, you know, when it was made specifically. And sometimes those ugly gremlins that come from a configuration change don't rear their head until later. You might install, you might go through a test period and everything works well. They might roll the configuration out to to all the servers, and everything is stable. And then there's these things called dependencies, where based on what's running on those machines, some things are dependent on others. And if they thought that this new configuration, you know, was good and stable and where they needed it to be, they may have implemented yet another configuration, which makes it that hard, that much more hard to roll things back, right? Because now you've got something else that's already in the way. You can't just do that. You know, you can't control Z on your keyboard, right, just to undo it. And that's why sometimes we have outages for 10 hours. I mean, these are quality people who are smart, who have been doing, you know, they do a lot of things really well. And as Jeff said, sometimes you're human and you know, it could be the difference between an A and a capital A, right? I mean, that's where how small differences can be that could screw up configurations.
Amos, what level, give me some idea of how much they would have tested this configuration change before they would have implemented it. I'm sure some guy just doesn't sit down and go, I'm gonna do a server configuration change today. There's probably been, by this point, what? a bunch of sandboxing, a bunch of what they, I guess, putting it in an environment that's safe and testing. Yeah, to a certain degree.
If they're going through the proper SDLC or software development lifecycle, then they are coming up with, here's a change we want to make. Here are the things we feel it's going to impact. It goes through probably some meetings of people talking about, here's things you didn't think about. Here's why we can or cannot do it. Here's things that we need to make sure are in place first. And then ideally it gets put into a test environment. And I'm actually speeding through this much quicker than it actually happens.
Yeah, your job sounds really easy.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, it's just a meeting with two guys and they say go. And then it gets put into a development area where, you know, the development or the testing areas obviously are not generally life size or identical to the production environment, but they have ways to mimic that. They have ways to run things, to do testing on it, pressure tests, to do stress tests, that sort of stuff. And if everything seems to work out okay, then you move to that next step, which is committing those changes to the actual servers. And you know, there's lots of individual. And again, I don't work for Facebook, so I don't know what their specifics are. But in general, there's lots of checks and balances in there. People are making sure, you know, are double checking that this change didn't roll another change back or didn't affect something that was unintended. And hopefully everything has gone through and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And when that change happens, you know, it's seamless to the customer. And to be honest, it's amazing we don't see this more often, maybe on a smaller scale, but you know, the number of changes that happen to Facebook, the new features that they roll out, just in a UI or the, you know, the interface change, something that you see differently, has to go through some pretty tremendous testing and updates, and the changes that could be made there could really screw stuff up. So, you know, every time you see a new change on Facebook, there's probably 100 changes that you don't see, and yet we rely on it all day, every day, and a 10-hour outage becomes a news story.
Yeah, and while we try to do as much testing as we can, nobody beats the 10 million beta users of Facebook users banging at the door,
right,
and finding those issues. I mean, in online games, you find this all the time, where once the users get the hold of it, they break it fairly quickly or find ways to break stuff that nobody have intended. So when they try their best and they test this and do radiations and try to look at all angles, it's almost impossible when you got a user and footprint the size of Facebook, because even when you're doing load testing, it's not quite the same as when a billion users suddenly hit that door and start banging on it. So,
well, thank you for that explanation. That that really helped me figure out, you know, how that all went bad on the user side of things. There wasn't this error message that said Facebook is down, because I've seen that before. That's happened.
No, and I mean, I think in particular in the upper Midwest, where people were dealing with emergencies and extreme weather, people didn't realize how much was going wrong. Kent, you were, you know, sandbagging and
oblivious,
trying to keep your home,
yep,
safe. And there are people, like I said, who have come to rely on Facebook as a news source, as a place that they get emergency info, that they go to their local county emergency services or National Weather Service. And without an error message, I mean, most of the errors I ran into were you tried to do something and it didn't work. And there was no other way until you backed in and Googled and went, you know, other places than Facebook, because Facebook couldn't put out posts.
Is there any data? There has been data about how many people get their news from Facebook. Is there any data out there about the second place they go? I mean, would people have naturally found another source for news, or do you think there was a day of discovery going on here?
Well, we all saw a lot of social traffic get migrated to Twitter as people. I mean, most emergency services in South Dakota do a great job of utilizing multiple platforms to get the word out. But if you look at the user base of Twitter versus Facebook, it's significantly different.
Right.
And you have people who don't have those secondary accounts, who didn't think to go to, if you are a great example, is National Weather Service, and I don't do this as a criticism to their website, but it's not an easy website to navigate if that's where you're going to try to go as a second source.
It's very governmenty, isn't it? And I say that as an owner of a governmenty kind of website
and
myself.
And they've done a great job of making their information usable, easy to understand, and easy for the average person to get to on social media. But if you lose that outlet, your secondary sources, if you're not using local news, if you're not turning on the TV or turning on the radio or what have you, that we've become very, very reliant. And I think we all saw what happens when we become that reliant.
Okay.
I actually found out that Facebook was down because my Twitter feed became full of, hey, everybody's running to Twitter because Facebook is down. So, you know, it's, yeah.
Were you entertained?
For a bit, and then now that stuff got in the way of what I was really looking for.
Right, exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Facebook. Could we possibly do that? We're going to talk a little bit about some privacy settings and making sure everything's up to date. I know Heather and I sat down in preparation for the show, and I had a couple things wrong in mind, so that could possibly mean that other folks do as well. But we'll get to that and much, much more in the show after this. And we are back in the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. We are talking tech with the computer folks today. John T. Myers here, Amos Aesop, Joel Brovelite, Jeff Litterick, Heather Benson is here. Heather, we've been doing a once a month sort of a thing for a couple of months now that is trying to help us understand how to maybe give a helping hand to those that are a little less knowledgeable in the tech arena. I know I've spoken to several people in the last few days with our coverage of high school basketball, girls and boys. Tournaments are continuing this week. We've got a lot of live streams up, and we've got a lot of folks watching them online that have needed a lot of help. And so I'm feeling the pain on some of this, but we're going to focus today particularly on privacy settings. And you've produced a blog post that I've linked on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/techradio. You'll find the link there. But, you know, the title indicates it's main kind of for seniors, but this could be for everybody, couldn't it?
It really should be for everyone. There isn't a single one of us using Facebook that probably doesn't need to go back and double check our privacy settings.
What's the biggest, most egregious thing, or what's the most concerning thing that people need to tick that box?
Well, I started the blog with the message that I get at least once a week that I'm just going to read, because I get it in my inbox every week.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I actually got another friend request from you, which I ignored, so you may want to check your account. Hold your finger on the message until the forward button appears, then hit forward and all the people you want to forward to. Please do not accept a new friend request from me at this time. I get that at least once a week. Sometime from the same person who sent it to me the week before, and I said, hey, not so much a thing.
Right.
And so I think addressing some basic privacy settings and walking through and having people go back and check whether you're 18 or 81 okay. is really, really important, that we take the time to check that, make sure we're doing the right thing, make sure Facebook hasn't made changes, because they're constantly making changes and breaking down their servers,
mm-hmm.
That affect us. But what we're going to do with this is actually break it down into bite-sized pieces. Because as you know, when you're trying to walk someone through a tech issue, if you start throwing too much out there, because there's a lot of layers to anything you're doing in technology, it can the onion will make you cry if you peel it too fast.
Hadn't heard that before, but you're right.
So what we're going to talk through is just a little bit about, first, how do you even get to your privacy settings? And I advise most of the people that I'm trying to help out over the phone, be it a relative or a friend, sit down on your computer and do it before you try to do it on your phone. You can do it on your phone. Everything that we're going to talk about is available on your phone. But sometimes it can be a little easier and a little less overwhelming as far as finding information to do it on an actual computer in an internet browser versus on your Facebook app. And so if you're going to be on your computer, you're going to go to your Facebook page and be all logged in and look for that little downward facing triangle in the upper right corner. And when you click on that, and if you go to our blog, we have screenshots to sort of walk you through this. There's going to be a spot towards the bottom of the drop down menu that says settings. And that's where you want to head. That's where it's going to open up a whole gamut of different tools that you can use to explore what Facebook's doing, what they know about you, what settings you can and cannot change. Things you're connected to that you may not realize. You should become very, very, very familiar with everything in that menu. We're just going to talk about privacy settings today, but every person who's using Facebook on a regular basis, or an irregular basis for that matter, should understand what those different boxes are. Take an hour one day and click through them. Take your lunch break and go through and figure out what is location, what is apps and websites, what is security and login. Understand what's in there and what you can change and what you can't change. But for today, we're just going to talk about what do we want to have our privacy settings at. So if you go in and look at privacy settings, you're going to get two big sections. One is your activity, and the other one's how people find and contact you. Now, your activity is pretty straightforward. So what are you posting on Facebook? And I do not advise, unless you are sharing something that's like an emergency thing or a very public-facing thing, something that you would be okay standing on your local street corner and shouting at every car that went by, that can be public. Everything else you post should only be to your friends. The general public doesn't need to land on your page and find out where you're at, where you're on vacation, what you ate for dinner, where you live, what your kids look like. Nobody needs to see that but your friends. So make sure that your future posts are set to your friends only. And then you can go back in that same spot and review what your past posts are. So let's say you've had Facebook Air 8 years. You have no idea what you've ever had that setting at before. You know that you just switched everything from public to friends because you didn't have it set up correctly. Facebook does give you the opportunity to limit all those past posts to friends only. Go ahead and get that done, because that way you know everything that you've posted in the past is protected as well.
Friends, I use friends of friends.
That's a judgment call, but you don't know your friends of friends. And if you think how big each circle is,
yeah,
would again, you go onto the street corner in your neighborhood where you only maybe know the neighbor on either side of you and shout that information out?
That's a very good point. I guess the reason I had reasons why I did that back in the day. And I used to share a lot of, let's say, photos of football games, basketball games, volleyball games. You know, when my kids were in high school, I liked to share photos of those events, and it seemed to get out. It seemed to permeate the community more when I would open that up a little bit. But you're advising backing it down. I think I can see your point of taking it just back to friends, because I may have friends that are a little bit more lax in the security than I am, and make some of their friends some questionable people. Maybe they don't know them.
Exactly.
Is that the reason?
That's a great reason. And just in general, those circles, even if it's people your friends know, how well do they know them? Who are those people? Not to be critical, but we all have friends that are maybe a little questionable. Or we don't know what they're doing in their real life. They're your high school buddy you friended, you haven't seen in 25 years. Your friends list should be people you know. And if it's people you know and people that you trust, then you should hopefully be okay. And if you're not, then you probably shouldn't be friends with him on Facebook either.
Okay.
And that kind of leads into this next part, is how can people find you and contact you? I advise everyone, that very first question is, who can send you friend requests? I have mine set to friends of friends, and this is why. If I don't know you at all, I've never met you, you don't know anyone I know, you are, you know, a very beautiful Russian woman who suddenly friends me for no reason, I probably don't need to accept that friend request.
That
I
never
probably
happens.
Don't need to have that friend request show up in my inbox. There are exceptions. I've been at conferences where I have business associates that I become friends with. We have no, you know, mutual contacts. You can open up that little page for a day or two so they can find you, or you can go friend them. But generally, friends of friends is a pretty safe bet. That is going to cut down on a lot of these random, who is this person? Why are they friending me? And that backs into the whole, if you get a friend request from someone you absolutely don't know, don't have contact with, wouldn't share where you're going on vacation with because you've never met them before, don't mm-hmm. accept their friend request. First thing you need to know, it's not like they get a big red thing saying, Kent Osborne denied your friend request. Unless they're going to check by going to your profile to see that it's pending, they have no idea that you said no. You aren't starting a fight. You aren't creating an issue. They don't know. Don't feel bad about it.
I don't like conflict, Heather. I just don't like
There is no conflict okay. in that scenario. All right. They really don't know. The worst case scenario is said that Kent's ignoring them. But generally, stick to friends of friends. And make sure, even if it is a friend of a friend, if you don't really know them, you don't need to accept that friend request. Don't feel guilty that, you know, Joel's friend sent you a friend request. Will Joel be mad at me? Well, maybe then you should talk to him about that. Who is this guy? Why is he friending me? Do we need to...
Yeah.
Again, would you invite them in your living room? If this person walked up and said, hey, I'm a friend of Heather Benson's, let me in your room, would you say yes? The answer is probably no, and that should probably be how you operate your Facebook privacy world as well. And then going down, this one's really, really important. So that first thing that I read to everyone about, hey, don't accept a new friend request from me. Well, people are like, oh, I got to change my password. Well, typically what people are doing is stealing your profile photo. They are accessing your friends list if it's public, and they're taking your name. None of those things you can change by changing your password. They didn't hack your account. They just copied things.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do to help with that is make sure that you are the only person who can see your friends list. And that's because what a spammer is trying to do is take Kent's photo, take Kent's name, access Kent's friends list, and say so that they get a new friend request or a message request from what appears to be Kent Osborne. And now they're operating on trust with you, like, oh, well, and they might have forgot that they did friend Kent. You know, I have people who are on my friends list that I might not have messaged or seen for 5 years on Facebook, and maybe Kent shut down his account and I have a new one. Who knows? So they accept it, and then they're leveraging your trust in your friends. Now you've accepted new Kent's friend request. You think it's real Kent, and real Kent has an emergency in Mexico and needs you to send him money, or, you know, fake Kent needs you to do this or that. They're leveraging that trust. But if you hide your friends list from hackers, then that takes away their leverage point a little bit, which leads to the next part is your profile picture probably doesn't need to be a big old picture of your face, because that's just making it that much easier to steal your profile picture, steal your name, steal your friends list, and leverage it. My picture's of one of my goats, because I'm hoping that my friends who
cute,
don't
right?
really know me that well, who are getting a second friend request from me and it's not my picture, are going to be like, who is this person?
Yeah, I mean, I'd argue that, like, the internet probably already has your photo.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway. I mean, I know,
but don't make it any easier.
A lot of people have been saying the whole, like, Facebook 10-year meme, you know, the what I looked like 10 years ago, what I look like now, was this big, like, conspiracy on how they could start to use their AI to track, like, aging and how your face changes, and basically Facebook already knows that because they already have your photos from 10
Absolutely.
Years ago. So the idea that they would start a meme just to do that, I don't buy that logic. But
it was probably some other company that came in and did that, you know. Like,
Revlon.
They said HP just got in trouble. They found out that they were using Flickr photos
to
train their AI, and they didn't let anybody know about that. So...
Yeah,
so it was advice. Probably somebody else harvesting that, John. It probably wasn't Facebook. Yeah, they already had it, but just making it easier for other folks. But
yeah. And so we're gonna stop there with all this. But really, what you're looking for are those opportunities to slow things down. Is it gonna be perfect? Are you gonna protect every corner? No, but can you make it a little bit harder? And then, like, what I'd like to end on is if it doesn't look right, doesn't feel right, get out of Facebook and ask questions another way. Text a person, call a person, talk to them face to face. Before you act on something you hear or a friend request or what have you, find another venue off Facebook to confirm it.
Don't go buy an iTunes gift cards before you follow up and make sure that that's actually who you're buying them for. Not that I would do that anyway, but there are people that do that.
Absolutely.
I hear stories, even locally, of that all the time, and it makes you wonder. But the more we can get the word out, I guess, the better. And we're suggesting that you help some other folks with their settings if maybe they don't know how to get in there.
Yeah, if you're familiar and you feel confident on your account, take the time to talk to your relatives, your friends, your coworkers, and check in with them. And don't think that you just went through and did this once. This is the last time you're going to go on Facebook and do your privacy settings. Go back. Check them again. See what's changed. See if there's something new that you can tighten it down even more. Facebook's been adding tools, especially with the ripple effects of the last 12 months or so. I would foresee our privacy tools getting stronger over time as they try to grapple with everything being thrown at them right now.
Well, I just see, and while you were talking, I was kind of twiddling on my settings on my phone, and I saw some things in there that I hadn't seen before. There's some settings that have to do with facial recognition mm-hmm. and some other things. So I've got some work to do, and I'll tell you, and here's the reason I've got a lot of work to do is back in the early days of Facebook, it was kind of a race. Can I get to 1,000? Can I get to 1,500 friends? How many friends can I possibly have? And this person's from South Dakota and they have an interesting job. I should friend them. And I would send a friend request, and most likely it'd be okay. So I've got a lot of folks that are my friends on Facebook that under your scrutiny, shouldn't be there. And I know I can make groups out of them, like high school classmates, because I get a lot of news from those folks. And I know I can do that. I just have never taken the time to go in and make groups of people.
Well, and you bring up two good points, Kent. You know, we all have used Facebook differently over time. And you always have that opportunity to go through your friends list and purge. And it's not a bad thing to purge. And again, you won't start a conflict. No one's going to get a notification saying, Ken Osborne dropped you. You aren't going to create those issues with people who have probably forgotten they're friends with you if you don't know them that well. So that is an option, and that is something I do regularly. I go through my list and really ask myself, why is this person on my list? And examine, you know, go, what is it, Marie Kondo? Go Kondo your Facebook list a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the last time I did that.
Bring you joy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Probably. That's not going to be a very long list then. You better be careful with that one on social media. And another thing you can do that Kent brings up, it's a little more technical, but when you are, you know, we just talked about making sure your future posts go to friends. You can make subgroups. I have an acquaintances group. You can mark people as just acquaintances versus your friends versus close family. And you can make judgment calls on who gets to see what, both when it's posted and in the past. So that's another level up. It's a level worth doing if you have an extensive, especially professional contact network on your Facebook page. Where you want to keep those professional contacts, but they don't really need to know what your kid did in kindergarten yesterday.
Right. They don't need to see that finger painting. Well, that's a bunch of really handy tips to have, and a prompting that folks, if you got a few extra minutes on your lunch hour or this weekend or whatever, pop into your settings and do a quick review. It does not take long. And it's easy to do. It's not a big hassle. They don't get in your way to are you sure you want? You're really sure you want? You're gonna really? Yeah. You know, it's none of that. You can just fix this stuff. If you make a mistake, you can go back and take care of it later. But
you really can't break anything back there. Don't feel too scared.
Yep. You're not gonna take the servers down.
We hope. Knock on wood.
With your account configuration changes. I guess any other folks have any comments on any tips on Facebook today before we wrap this up?
No, I think there's some good tips there from Heather, and it's definitely worth doing. I think we're also going to see a lot of change from Facebook in the future. So Zuckerberg recently released his kind of manifesto that he writes every year, and a lot of the hope is to move to more encrypted private messaging. I mean, Facebook wants to be Snapchat again, I heard someone say online. So I think you're going to see some change. They know they need to do it. We'll see how much they are willing to do it, because they have a pretty flawless business model. But man, they're taking, you know, 2018, 2019 has been a tough year for tough 12 months, I'd say, for Facebook.
It has been. Yeah, he got out over 3,000 word blog post, if you actually want to read it. But one of the quotes, I believe the future of communications will increasingly shift to private, encrypted services where people can be confident that what they say to each other stays secure and their messages and content won't stick around forever. This is the future I hope we'll help bring about. So that was Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg saying something that you wouldn't expect, because Facebook's been very open. He's saying we're going to go back to being more private on communication. So interestingly enough, and we'll be following that for sure as 19 continues and we get into 20. But we'll talk about that on later shows. And we have more to discuss after this quick break. Just a reminder, you're in the moment on SDPB. We hope to hear from you as well. In the moment at SDPB.org is the email address. Text us at 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. And welcome back to this edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech. John T. Myers here from his shop down there, just down from where you're at right now, John.
You bet. Main Avenue.
A brief walk. You didn't have to float down this morning, did you?
No, thank you. Thankfully, things are slowly drying, or at least freezing temporarily. We still have a lot of water to go in Sioux Falls. We got some in our basement, actually, but not too bad. But
I think there's a lot of hands raising out there in radio land with people with water in the basement. So we feel for you. And boy, you know, I just pray. I'm just thankful it's not worse for me as I see the photos and videos come in from on Facebook and on Twitter and through social media. My wife and I got home last night from some events we were at, we started opening up social media and it was gasp and gasp after gasp. And did you see this? And oh my gosh, that. A news station in Sioux Falls. I gotta say on the radio, I gotta give some props to KDLT. They were flooded out of their studio, and they all took it upon themselves and went live on the internet and delivered the news from wherever they were.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty wild. Yeah, their whole studio. Right.
But that's awesome that the technology exists today. That
totally.
You can do that, right? I mean, Dan Rather would have never had that option to to be snowed in at his house and be able to get the evening news out.
So. True.
Yeah, that's so if you haven't seen the story about that story, it's a pretty interesting read as well. But what a amazing week it's been weather wise Joel, it was Amos earlier, said something about it. I never thought I'd see the day when, you know. And I never thought I'd see the day when they grounded how many aircraft? The Boeing, 737 MAX?
MAX.
Looks like it's a software patch, huh?
Isn't that amazing? I mean, I was thinking about that this morning, that at some point someone typed the wrong thing into a series of code, and that was the beginning of a couple of serious accidents. It's a lot of fatalities. Talk about the amount of money that's being lost by all of the planes that are grounded, which is worth it. But then there's also the frustration that comes along with it, right? The people who are not able to get to where they were going, people who may have had vacations that were based on that airplane getting them to where they needed to be, and they're either a day late or lose out completely.
Don't even go,
It's amazing that was caused by something software related, which basically comes down to a guy or gal sitting in an office somewhere typing something out wrong.
And on the flip side, on the positive side, I it's wild to think. I saw Tesla made a software update that now will make your car the range of how many miles you can go on a battery go further, go longer. And so we think about, you know, you buy a car and what you buy is what you get when you drive off the lot, right? That's the gas mileage. That's the size of the tank and all these features. And here's a car. I saw someone tweet, I bought my Tesla a year ago. And now thanks to a download yesterday, I can drive it further than I could before.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
That is amazing. And speaking of Tesla news, not to just keep daisy chaining into new topics, but they announced a new model. Was it yesterday?
Yesterday, a Model Y, they're calling it, for, I believe it's starting at $39,000. It's kind of their low-end SUV, or are they calling it crossover? I don't know, crossover type of car. Been an interesting talk about companies in the headlines a lot. Tesla would be square in the middle of the crosshairs there, good and bad. So they had an interesting, you know, they've been struggling to get production costs down to be able to ship this Model S, the $35,000 car that, you know, millions of people have been lining up to get. So they come out and say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get rid of all of our stores. We're going to get rid of all the retail stores. And they have such, you know, rabid fan base that people will buy a car online. Won't even test drive it, right? You go online and you put it in your shopping cart and buy a car. And so just that, in theory, just that cost is going to allow them to ship the cars quicker and get them to market. And then a couple weeks later, they changed their mind and said, no, actually, we're going to keep our stores. And so, you know, and Elon Musk is usually off the hook on Twitter saying whatever he wants to say. So, Tesla is an interesting company these days in terms of being in the headlines.
Yeah, it's a 300 mile range on that Model Y and seats 7. So a little bit more of a people mover.
I think that's a small 7, but yeah, I think they say.
Okay, 7 people, not my size.
Yeah.
Well, when you don't have an engine, you know, combustion engine, they do.
I think two of them face backwards, right, in the trunk? Is that how they do that?
I believe they're.
No, seriously.
Yeah, there's nothing under the hood. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they're. Yeah, I could be wrong.
I know how the X, which was their first kind of SUV, that's how it did. It was like two in the front, three in the back, and then two facing rear.
Oh, the seats. You're talking about the seats.
The people.
That I don't know about. But yes, I think you're right.
I haven't done that since I was a kid.
Remember it's like sitting in the back of a truck.
It's actually the safest way to travel in a car.
Yeah.
Why?
Because your head doesn't go forward. That's why baby seats have to be backward facing for the first however long.
But the social aspect is kind of
that's a whole other deal.
Right. Put the kids
dibs
in the back.
On the rear.
I'm not saying
seats.
I want to do it. Right. I'm just saying.
Right. Look at the street, son.
Just data.
Very interesting. We'll follow up on that. I hope they can make them. I hope they get them cranked out and see some on the streets. We have a question in on Facebook, and I'm not familiar with this, so one of you security minded folks are going to have to help me answer this. Golden West is offering free protection through Viper, VIPRE. It's all in caps, so I'm assuming that's what they're calling it. It says I have to get the protection. I pay Geek Squad for Webroot. Should I do it? So is this a malware? Is this a antivirus? Has anybody heard of Viper?
Yeah, it's another, it's akin to a McAfee or a Norton or Webroot or any other antivirus out there.
Okay.
But, you know, everybody seems to have their good and bad experiences with it, and it'll be interesting to see if Jeff's had different than I have. But Viper, I've not used in a production area. I've seen their logos. We get advertisements for them all the time. It's certainly a company that not a fly by night kind of company by any means. But I can tell you my experience with the Webroot is that when we go in to fix things and put in new AV, we are typically removing Webroot. In my experience, it's not been good, but certainly there are folks who have had good experience with that. So in this case, this particular answer, I would take them up on it.
So Marty, if you're listening, and certainly it's probably better than nothing. It's a good start, and it's free.
And they're paying Geek Squad, which is Best Buy, for Webroot. So not only are you, in my opinion, getting a piece of software that may be as good or better, you're also saving that cash.
Very good, very good. Joel, we haven't heard a lot of Apple news recently, but There's a big event coming up March 25th, and it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. I think the tagline is the show is on or something like that. I can't remember what it is, but it's rumored that they're going to announce their streaming service as well as their news service.
News.
Yeah. It's kind of a, from what I understand, and I could be completely wrong, but from what I understand, it's going to bundle together traditional news services, so you could subscribe to, you know, certain newspapers or whatever, so you have access to, whether it's the New York Times or, you know, whatever newspaper it is you want. They're going to kind of bundle them together and make it a paid platform that, you know, traditional services can use, but you can kind of rely on. So, not sure exactly how it's going to work, but it should be interesting. I think the bigger deal probably that'll gather most of the air in the room when they announce it will be the streaming service. They've invited some big stars, Jennifer Aniston, I think Steve Carell, a few other people are going to be there to talk about shows that they're going to do.
But no hardware. Right.
I wouldn't bet on that, actually. There's a rumor that they're going to come out with the version 2 of their AirPods. Hard to tell if they'll actually do that then, or they might save that, but the timing would be right for that. I guess it just depends on, you know, how much time they have left over. But that should be a pretty big announcement.
They're taking a pretty big bite because it, you know, subscription service, software, services, entertainment, media. Again, just not your typical big splashy
event. One advantage they have over a lot of companies, two advantages. They have a ton of money, so they can just buy whatever they want for the most part. If they want to get this director or this star, you know, they can write a check for that. They don't have to go asking or begging or gathering the money for that. The second thing is they're easily one of the most trusted companies out there, especially in tech. So they definitely have that brand recognition for them. And then they have, of course, droves of crazies like me that will just buy anything that they put out, you know.
Yeah. So fanboys, we call them. Yeah, fanboys.
That's the third thing there.
Okay.
So, yeah, it should be interesting, but I think the next show we'll be able to talk about that. But I think you're not going to be able to, you know, turn on a device and not see some news about it when it comes out.
I see that Verizon put out a price point on 5G. It's going to cost folks an extra $10 a month if you want the obliteratingly fast speed that 5G brings versus 4G. It was interesting that Chicago and Minneapolis are a couple of the first cities that are going to get that. Of course, 30 other cities soon. I haven't heard. I don't know if anybody in the room has heard if potential rollout in this area. Anybody getting any close?
No, not I.
Yeah. I haven't heard either, but big cities and the price point, so I'm sure that'll spark reactions from other companies as well, as throwing it in free or costing money. But time is running out. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my panelists today and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. Have a safe weekend, everyone.